All right, let's dive into another fascinating case, shall we? This time we're looking at Alabama versus Bluebird Body Company from way back in 1978. A Fifth Circuit decision, and you know what that means. It sets a precedent for how courts across the country figure out if a class action lawsuit, especially one that wants to cover the entire nation, can actually move forward.
Yeah, this Bluebird case, it really shows the kind of balancing act that courts have to do, you know. On one hand, they want to make the legal process as efficient as possible, and class actions are really good at that, right? You have a whole bunch of people who have potentially been wronged, and a class action lets them kind of band together. But then on the other hand, courts also got to be super careful that everyone involved, including the companies being sued, is treated fairly. And that's what makes this deep dive so interesting. We're going to look at why a nationwide class action, which is pretty ambitious, didn't work out, but a smaller class just within Alabama did get the green light.
So before we get into the nitty-gritty of classes and courts, let's set the scene right. Back in the 1970s, there were some serious accusations being thrown around in the school bus manufacturing industry. What was Alabama and the local school boards claiming? What was going on?
So basically, the state of Alabama, the superintendent of education there, and a county school board, they all teamed up and filed a lawsuit against Bluebird and a bunch of other companies that made those big yellow school bus bodies. They even included some distributors who were operating in Alabama. And what they were alleging was a conspiracy, a big one, to fix prices on these bus bodies and to basically divide up the market amongst themselves right there in Alabama.
So it wasn't just like, oh, the prices are naturally high because of the market or something. They were saying there was a deliberate effort, like a backroom deal, to keep those prices way up.
Exactly. The lawsuit, it claimed that there were actual agreements between these manufacturers and the Alabama distributors to set the prices. Yeah. And then they also said these companies were doing things like bid rotation, where they'd take turns winning contracts, and accommodation bidding, which is basically like, you know, submitting a bid you know you're going to lose just to make it look like there's actual competition. But in reality, it was all rigged.
Wow. Okay. I'm starting to get the picture here. So who were they trying to represent with this lawsuit? Who would be in these classes they were talking about?
So they were trying to form two separate classes, right? Two groups of people. The first one was a statewide class. This would include all the government entities in Alabama that bought school bus bodies during that time. You know, think school districts, state agencies, any public body that needed buses.
And the second class, that was the one that aimed much bigger, right? Nationwide.
Right. That one was trying to be massive. It wanted to include basically every government entity in the whole U.S., except for Georgia for some reason, and all of them who bought school bus bodies from these companies. So, yeah, really ambitious.
So they start this case in a district court, right?
Mm-hmm.
What did the judge initially think about these classes, the statewide and the nationwide one?
Well, the district court, they decided to go ahead and certify both classes, both the Alabama one and the much larger one. And they even laid out a plan for how the trial would go down. First, they'd have a phase focused on liability, which means figuring out if the companies actually did this conspiracy thing they were accused of. Then, if they found them liable, they'd have a whole other phase to figure out the damages, you know, how much each member of the class actually lost because of this whole scheme.
Interesting. So the district court was like, all right, let's get this class action show on the road. I bet Bluebird wasn't exactly thrilled about this, were they?
No, not at all. Bluebird, they appealed the certification of that huge nationwide class to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. And their main argument was, look, even if there's some evidence of a conspiracy, think about it. There could be thousands of class members all over the country, right? And each one of them might have different issues, different situations, different details that need to be looked at. That's a whole lot of individual stuff to wade through. It's going to outweigh any questions that are common to everyone in the class, they argued.
Okay, so that sets up the big question the Fifth Circuit had to answer. What was the main issue they had to figure out in this appeal?
So the key thing was whether the district court had applied this rule, Rule 23B3, correctly. It's part of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, the kind of guidelines for lawsuits. And this rule, it sets out all the things you need to have to be certified as a class action. And a big one, the one that really tripped things up here, is this predominance thing. Basically, the Fifth Circuit had to figure out if the common questions, you know, the stuff that applied to everyone in the class, were more important than the questions that would only affect certain individuals. And they had to do this for both the statewide class and the nationwide class.
And I'm guessing the Fifth Circuit didn't just agree with the lower court. They came to different conclusions about the two proposed classes, didn't they?
Right. You're catching on. So for the Alabama class, the statewide one, they upheld the certification. They agreed, yeah, there's enough evidence to suggest that there might have been a conspiracy that specifically targeted Alabama. You know, there could be evidence like communications between the companies, patterns in the bids they submitted. Maybe even someone steps forward and says, hey, I was there. I saw them cooking up this scheme. And because the conspiracy was focused on one state, it was easier to believe that the same evidence could prove both that the conspiracy existed and that it actually affected the prices paid by those government entities in Alabama.
Makes sense to me. A smaller area means things are probably more similar, right? The market conditions, the way things are done, it's more consistent. Now, the nationwide class, that one didn't fare so well, did it?
Yeah, that one hit a roadblock. The Fifth Circuit reversed the lower court's decision on that one. They said, look, the plaintiffs, those bringing the lawsuit, they didn't show us enough evidence that there was one giant national conspiracy affecting all these government entities across almost the whole U.S.
So let's break down why they made this split decision. Why was the Alabama class okay, but the nationwide one was a no-go? What was it about the Alabama class that worked?
Well, for the Alabama class, like we said, the court thought, okay, there's a decent argument that there's a bunch of evidence pointing to a single conspiracy just for the Alabama market. They were thinking stuff like communication between companies and distributors in Alabama, patterns in the bids submitted in that state, maybe even testimony from insiders who knew what was happening with school bus sales there. And since that alleged conspiracy was, you know, geographically limited to just one state, it was easier to believe they could prove both the conspiracy itself and the fact that it actually messed with the prices everyone in Alabama was paying.
Right. I get it. Smaller area, more consistent stuff happening. Okay, so why did the nationwide class fail? What was the Fifth Circuit thinking there?
The main problem, as they saw it, was that there wasn't really any evidence of one massive nationwide conspiracy. They pointed out that the market for these buses, how they were bought, even the regulations, could be totally different from one state to another. So to prove that this nationwide class was really harmed, you'd basically have to prove separate conspiracies were going on in each state, and then prove how each one specifically affected each government entity. Like, imagine trying to say that a price hike in, say, California was caused by the exact same secret deal that made prices go up in Maine without showing any direct connection. It just wouldn't hold water.
Oh, I see. So it wasn't enough to say, hey, these companies were probably having similar shady conversations all over the country. You had to prove that those conversations actually led to higher prices for everyone in all those different places.
Exactly. And this is where a super important concept in antitrust law comes in, impact. It's also called antitrust injury. The Fifth Circuit really hammered on this idea that you can't just assume everyone in the class got hurt just because there might have been a conspiracy.
Okay, let's talk more about impact, because it seems pretty important. What exactly does someone have to show to prove they've been hurt by an antitrust violation?
Well, the Bloomberg court, they went back to a previous Fifth Circuit case, Terrell versus Household Goods Carriers Bureau. That case laid out three things you got to prove to get damages in an antitrust case. One, there's got to be a real violation of antitrust law, some illegal stuff going down. Two, the plaintiff, the person suing, actually has to have been hurt, like financially, because of that violation. That's the impact part, the fact that they were damaged. And three, they got to show some evidence so the court can figure out at least roughly how much they lost.
And in Bluebird, the court was laser focused on that second part, the impact, right?
Yeah.
Whether the buyers actually paid more because of this alleged conspiracy.
Totally. They kept saying impact can't be just assumed. You got to prove it. And you got to prove it for every single person in the class. And for a class action to really work, everyone's got to be on the same page. You know, there has to be common evidence that shows everyone was affected in a similar way.
So for the Alabama class, the court was open to the idea that maybe they could use common evidence, like looking at all the bids submitted in Alabama or the overall price trends, to prove that prices were jacked up for everyone buying buses there.
Yep, that was the thinking. The court was willing to say, okay, in a single state like Alabama, things are probably fairly similar in terms of regulations and how the market works. So maybe, just maybe, you could show that everyone got hit with higher prices using the same evidence. But when you try to do that for a nationwide class, it's a whole different ballgame. You've got all these different states, each with their own ways of doing things, their own markets, and their own rules. So it's way harder to say that one piece of evidence proves that every single government entity in the whole country paid more just because of this alleged nationwide conspiracy. It would be like saying, you know, some big economic event happened and it hurt every single business in the country in the exact same way. Doesn't really make sense, right?
Right, right. Okay. So the district court, they had this idea of splitting the trial into two parts, right? First, they'd decide if the companies were liable, like guilty of the conspiracy, on a national level. Then they'd handle the damages, how much each person lost, individually in state courts. What did the Fifth Circuit think about that?
They weren't fans. They had a few big problems with that idea. First off, just think about the logistics, right? Imagine trying to coordinate potentially thousands of individual cases about damages, all happening in different state courts.
Yeah.
After you've already got this national decision on liability, it'd be a total mess, a logistical nightmare.
Yeah, I can see that. Super inefficient. Things dragging on forever.
Totally. And on top of that, the court was worried about inconsistent verdicts. Like, what if a jury in one state looks at a specific government entity's case and says, well, actually, we don't think they were hurt by this conspiracy, even though there was a national finding of liability? That's a really confusing situation, and it might not be fair to everyone involved.
And this brings us back to antitrust injury, doesn't it? Just because a company did something wrong doesn't automatically mean everyone gets to collect damages. You have to connect the dots and show that those bad actions actually caused specific harm to specific people or entities.
Precisely. The Fifth Circuit made it crystal clear that in antitrust law, it's not enough to just say, hey, these companies conspired. You have to prove that the conspiracy actually caused each plaintiff, each person suing, to suffer a real concrete injury. And without a way to prove that impact across the whole class during liability phase, even if they found a national conspiracy, it wouldn't solve anything for the individual claims. Everyone would still have to go to court and prove they personally overpaid because of the conspiracy.
This all circles back to that big requirement in Rule 23(b)(3), doesn't it? The whole predominance thing. For a class action to be certified, the common questions have to be more important than the individual ones. So how did the need to prove impact separately for everyone in the nationwide class mess that up?
That's the heart of why they rejected the nationwide class. Because proving impact would mean looking at each government entity individually. You know, what decisions did they make when buying buses? What other options did they have? What was the market like in their specific area? All those questions would have to be answered separately for potentially thousands of entities across the whole country. So the court said, nope. The question of whether there was a national conspiracy, that's not the main thing here. The individual questions about damages, those are way more important. And they even quoted another case that said, impact is unique to each plaintiff. But for the statewide class, they felt like the common questions about whether there was a conspiracy in Alabama and whether it affected prices there, those are probably going to be the main focus of the case. So it passed the predominance test.
Okay, so for everyone listening, especially those of you interested in law, let's recap the big takeaways from Alabama versus Bluebird Body Company. What are the main lessons we can learn from this case?
All right, so lesson number one. If you want to get a class action certified under Rule 23(b)(3), the common questions have got to be the star of the show. It's not enough to just have a few things in common. Those common issues have to be the main focus of the whole case, and they have to be more important than the individual issues. Lesson number two. In antitrust law, you absolutely have to prove that people were actually injured, that they suffered an impact because of the illegal activity. You can't just point to a conspiracy and call it a day. And that proof usually needs to be something that applies to everyone in the class, not just a bunch of individual stories. And lesson number three, if you're dealing with price fixing or market allocation, it's usually easier to get a class certified if you keep it geographically limited, like the statewide class in Bluebird. That's because it's simpler to show everyone in a smaller area was affected in a similar way, and the market conditions are more likely to be consistent.
So this wasn't just some random case from the 70s that's been forgotten, right? This Bluebird decision still matters today.
Oh yeah, big time. Alabama versus Bluebird Body Company. It's a precedent that gets cited all the time by courts when they're trying to decide if a nationwide antitrust class action can go forward. It's like a textbook example of how courts try to balance things, you know? They want to make the legal process efficient, and class actions are great for that, but they also got to make sure everyone involved gets a fair shake, and that sometimes means saying no to these huge nationwide class actions.
So Bluebird, it really shows that tricky balance courts have to strike. They want to make things efficient, and they want to make sure everyone who's been wronged gets their day in court. But they can't just let class actions run wild, right? They have to make sure the company's being sued or treated fairly, and they have to make sure there's real proof of harm, not just assumptions.
Exactly. And it's a big reminder for lawyers on both sides of
Right.
these cases. You know, the lawyers bringing the lawsuits, they got to think carefully about how big their class should be and how they're going to prove everyone in that class was actually hurt in a similar way. And the lawyers defending the companies, they're going to be looking for any sign that there are too many individual issues, too many differences between the people in the class, because that could be their ticket to shutting the whole class action down.
All right, well, we've covered a lot of ground today, haven't we? We've explored Alabama versus Bluebird Body Company, learned about impact and antitrust injury, and seen how courts grapple with these huge class action lawsuits. But before we go, I want to leave you with a little something to ponder. Think about those key principles we talked about today, the need for common questions to be the most important ones, and the requirement to prove that a whole group of people was harmed in a similar way. How do you think those principles apply to other types of class actions, not just antitrust cases? What about, say, environmental lawsuits or cases about consumer protection? Imagine trying to prove that a company's pollution hurt a whole community, or that a faulty product harmed thousands of consumers across the country. How do you prove everyone was affected in the same way? What kind of evidence do you need? It's a big question, a complex one, and it shows just how important and impactful this idea of class action lawsuits really is. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive, and we'll see you next time for another fascinating legal exploration.